This is the Skate Podcast, talking Bruins hockey with WEEI Bruins writers Scott McLaughlin, Bridget Prue, and Brian DeFelice. Lace them up for some Bees talk. It's Odyssey's The Skate Pod on WEEI. Woo!
Welcome into episode 285 of the Skate Podcast. I'm Brian DeFelice, joined by Scott McLaughlin. No Bridget today. She had personal matters to attend to, but it is trade deadline day in the NHL, Scott. It has come. It has gone. The Bruins were not very active, but they did make a couple of smaller moves, which probably was the expectation for most, though I'm sure some were optimistic that Don could find a way to make a big splash. It didn't happen. So before we get into our opening shift, Scott, maybe you can just kind of rattle off quickly the moves the Bruins did make.
Yeah, so they wound up making two trades. Got Pat Maroon, veteran winger from the Minnesota Wild, in exchange for a 2026 conditional six-round pick, and Luke Toporowski. Toporowski, AHL forward. The six-round pick only gets moved if Maroon appears in at least one playoff game for the Bruins this season. And then they also acquired defenseman Andrew Peak from the Columbus Blue Jackets, a right shot, in exchange for Jacob Zboril and a 2027 third-round pick.
Okay. So with that said, my opening shift is that I know other teams around the league, other top contenders, they may have made some bigger moves, right? You look at Carolina, and they get Jake Guentzel. They get Evgeny Kuznetsov, who's had a rough go of it in Washington, but a guy that's had a high ceiling and has a historically in the past and has a championship to his name. And there were, you know, other teams around the league got better. And I guess my opening shift is, while the Bruins didn't make that big move, I am absolutely A-okay with their 2024 deadline, because they couldn't really do anything. And barring a Linus Ullmark hockey trade, which I will save for you, I didn't think they could really make a big splash. And if you can't make a big splash, try to make yourself better for playoff hockey. And I think the Bruins sit here today and they are better built for the playoffs and playoff hockey than they were yesterday. And I also think in addition to today, they've also been quietly adding pieces internally throughout this season that culminates in them being better built for playoff hockey. I look at Brazo and I look at Parker Watherspoon as two players who were not everyday players to the Bruins back in October, and their style of play and their grit, Brazo's size in particular, it makes the Bruins tougher to play against. Adding Patrick Maroon and his size, I think it's a good move for the Bruins, because while some Bruins fans may not love it because they don't like him from the past playing against Boston, or they think he might be slow, or it doesn't really matter. He has three rings on his hand, and he will stand up for the superstars in Boston, like David Pastrnak, like Charlie McAvoy. You see teams like Toronto this past week taking liberties on the Bruins' top players, and you need to have more than just Trent Frederick willing to go. And obviously, Andrew Peak is somebody that isn't well known, but again, he has size, and I think he has some upside. There might be some questions about why the Bruins took on his contract when they're so tight against the cap. We'll get into that. But my opening shift is, simply put, the Bruins are better built for the playoffs today than yesterday, and I guess objectively, that's a positive trade deadline.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. We'll get into it. I'd say not overly optimistic about this team's chances, but we've seen plenty of years where the favorites on paper aren't the ones who go the furthest. So yeah, well, you know, lots to break down there. My opening shift is about the one big splash that apparently the Bruins did try to make. Reports came out right around the trade deadline, right around 3 p.m. Kevin Weeks on ESPN said that he believes the Bruins thought they had something with Linus Ullmark, a trade involving Ullmark that Ullmark nixed by exercising his no trade clause. He has a 16 team no trade list. So if the deal was with a team in that list and he was unwilling to alter it, he can block the trade. Frank Saravalli of Daily Faceoff added that he believes the team it was close with was the Los Angeles Kings. I have not seen any reports as of 5 p.m. when we're recording of what the Bruins would have gotten back. There's a couple interesting pieces there. Pierre-Luc Dubois is a center who has not worked out in L.A. Could have been one option. I saw Matt Roy's name, right shot defenseman, pop up, and we know the Bruins did add a different right shot defenseman, so maybe there was something there. Quinton Byfield, people have mentioned, you know, young, highly high draft pick, who maybe hasn't found the most natural fit there. Like, so lots of interesting possibilities, but from the Bruins perspective, the most interesting is just that it seems like Don Sweeney, based on these reports, was willing to trade Linus Ullmark, was willing to make a deal to move on from one of his goalies to add elsewhere. It didn't happen. Don Sweeney was asked about it. He spoke to us on the media a little while ago, right after the deadline, and not surprising, but declined to confirm or deny anything involving moves that didn't happen. Was asked directly if Ullmark utilized his no trade clause to block a move and declined to answer. Again, not surprising. Questions have to be asked, of course, but I don't blame him for not answering them. So, I think we all expect the Bruins to circle back on that in the offseason because Jeremy Swayman is due for a raise, due for another extension. So you figure, you know, at some point the tandem does have to come to an end. And it looks like there was at least a chance that it might have been now.
So we can finally now put all the speculation to an end about the Bruins and how badly they want to try this goalie platoon in the playoffs and the postseason because they were willing to part with one of them. So I'm not saying that they don't think it's still a good idea with the two of them around, but the Bruins took a look at their roster, assessed it, and said, okay, even if we'd like to do a goalie rotation potentially, it's riskier to not try to upgrade our roster. And so I guess that kind of puts speculation to rest. Like what the Bruins value more was filling holes in their roster as opposed to going with this goalie platoon of two elite goaltenders because for one reason or another, the Bruins, they decided to change their mind a little bit. Maybe it's because Ullmark hasn't been elite this year. Maybe they're falling out of – maybe Swayman's just grabbing the job more and they said, you know what, let's see what we can get for him.
Yeah, I think – I feel like the Bruins for a while, going all the way back to the summer, have been open to the idea of trading Ullmark. It was just – it was always going to have to be an offer that blew them away. And, maybe the Kings were going to blow them away. Again, we just don't know what the offer was. But I do wonder if what changed is maybe they were more willing to break even or, you know, like a true hockey trade where, all right, yes, you're downgrading this position, but you're upgrading elsewhere. You're not getting completely blown away. It's not like a home run, like, oh yeah, any GM would make that trade. It would have been a tough decision, but yeah, I think, you know, and it's why I tie into your opening shift a little, like I think this team did have needs elsewhere that needed filling in order for me to feel like they're a legitimate Stanley Cup contender, and maybe trading Ullmark would have addressed one of them. In the end, you ultimately didn't. You know, you didn't. I still think they're conservatively a top nine scorer short. I know at times their top nine as is has looked okay, but to me, there's just been too much inconsistency there. I really think that's something that you would have liked to have seen addressed. they couldn't find a way to do it. You know, I still have questions about the left side of their defense. They obviously added a righty and peak, and I think that helps, you know, push Kevin Shattenkirk and maybe solidify your third pairing. But on the left side, you're still, come playoffs, you're going to be counting on, because by the way, another development here is Derek Forbert's going on long-term injury reserve and his season is most likely over. Sweeney said he's dealing with two significant injuries, at least one of which requires surgery. So in the playoffs, you're going to have either Matt Grizzlick, Parker Weatherspoon, or Mason Lorai playing top 4 minutes. And I know everyone's excited about Lorai and wants him to handle that. He's a rookie. He still makes mistakes. I'm just saying, like, there's going to be some growing pains there, and it might be costly.
Look, it's not unfair to say that, but everybody makes mistakes. Every player makes mistakes. Now, the frequency at which that happens, sure, varies player to player, but Mason Lorai has been a welcomed addition. I don't look at that option and say, oh, damn, like the Bruins' chances go out the window because they got Lorai in their top six or even their top four. I think he's been getting better and better as the season goes along. He's emotionally engaged. He's physically engaged. Charlie McAvoy gets tripped up against the Maple Leafs the other day, and Mason Lorai is the first guy into the scrum. So if you want to tell me he's a rookie, objectively, that's true. If you want to tell me he's mistake prone, again, I'm not going to argue that. But again, there's not many players that don't make mistakes. So, and as far as Parker Weatherspoon, I think he's earned a spot. And I'm not here to really debate what you were just saying. I think it's true. It's a risk. It's a gamble. But sure, go for it. I mean, Derek Forbert has his deficiencies. So, I actually think their defense is in a good spot. Like, even their left side. Like, if their left side is, when they're healthy, if it's Lindholm and Lorai and Weatherspoon or Grizzlick or, like, I don't know. That's not bad depth, honestly, especially because we know that those players are still around.
It's not bad depth. I just think you're missing another true, like, impact top four guy that you could use. And Lorai has the upside to be that eventually. I just don't know if there have been games this year where he has been that, and you're like, wow, like he's there. And then the next game that might be a little off. And I just think you're going to get some of that in the playoffs too. Playoffs are different than regular season. Listen, I don't hate that this has ultimately, I think this season has ended up where I expect it to be all along, which sure. is make the playoffs, ride it out, see how things go. Hope you get hot. Hope maybe, you know, you run into a team that goes a little cold and see what happens. But so there are two different levels. What I'm talking about is, like, I think they needed at least one of those things, another legitimate, consistent scorer or an impact top four left shot defenseman for me to look at them as, like, a legitimate cup contender in the same stratosphere as Carolina, Rangers, Florida, any of those Western teams that just went crazy, Vegas, Colorado, you know, so Edmonton. But I'm not way down on this team. I'm not, like, upset that they didn't do more. I just feel like it lowers the ceiling, lowers the expectations a little. When that there have been moments this season where I think we all were maybe lifting that bar and aiming a little higher.
Except for me, right? Because I feel like you were here and you're kind of coming down a little bit, and I was here and I'm just kind of like, yeah, like, this is kind of what I thought. Like,
yeah.
I mean, look, if the argument here is that
I have big emotional swings, Brian.
Yes, you do. If what you're saying is that on paper they are not the elite of the elite Stanley Cup contenders this year, despite what they are in the standings, which is third in the league, you're not getting an argument here for me. I agree. I don't think that on paper that they are perfect, and not that any team is, but I don't think that they are on paper as strong top to bottom as your top, you know, your Colorado's, your Vegas, Florida, Carolina, as you mentioned, right? New York. But what I've learned, especially from last year, and I knew this going into last year's postseason too, but it was just a unfortunate reaffirmation of it. On paper, as you kind of said earlier, it doesn't necessarily matter. I mean, there are so many, there's a handful of teams that really improved their team, whether it was at the deadline or in the month leading up to it, that are contenders, right? Vancouver, Colorado, certainly Vegas playing their LTIR games again, Carolina, Florida. Like, Florida added Tarasenko, Florida added Kyle Okposo, who, you know, he's an older guy, but he's a captain in Buffalo. Like, he gets it, right? Good, you know, good guy to have in your room. All these teams improved vastly, but only one team wins the Stanley Cup. So for most, it's going to be kind of all for naught, right? It happens every year. One team wins, everybody else loses. So, like, last year, the Bruins, they were all in. They pushed their chips to the middle. They brought in Orloff. They brought in Hathaway. They brought in Bertuzzi. You had, I want to say, Holland, Foligno on LTIR at the time. So it took a while for them to come back into the fold. And by the time the playoffs rolled around, you had this collection of talent, but you just didn't really know what to do with it all. And it kind of caused problems for the Bruins ultimately. And they ran into a team in Florida that was playing meaningful hockey all year, had a top to bottom far inferior roster on paper than Boston, but that team went to the Stanley Cup Finals. So what I've learned or have been reminded of, and hopefully everybody else learns, is they're a good team. They play well as a unit. It's kind of the opposite this year. They didn't add all these pieces. Let's see this year if a team that's gelled together all year, let's see if they can go on a run and trust what's gotten them to this point. Like, if they did bring in a top two center, let's say at the deadline, somehow, how does that affect Charlie Coyle or Pavel Zacha, who have been playing those elevated roles all year? So let's see how this goes. And I do think, Scott, of course, like, while I think that they do have enough guys in their top four when healthy and when they're playing on their game, like, unless you're Vegas or Colorado or Carolina, there's not many teams that have two players the caliber of Lindholm and McAvoy in their top four at all. So, like, we're kind of getting used to those two being in our top four. A lot of teams don't have that. So certainly they up front, they were missing, I think, a 30 goal caliber score for sure on paper. But let's just see what happens. I do think that, again, Brazo, Maroon, Peak, like Wotherspoon, these guys collectively, they've given you some size and physicality and attrition that really pays off in the spring. So I do think they improved there. I do.
Yeah, so do I. I think they're better now than they were a couple of weeks ago. But to me, it's a fairly marginal improvement. Like you said, figuring some things out with guys coming up has been important. And the two guys they got, maybe they help, maybe they don't. Like, if we want to get into those guys, Maroon, I have absolutely no problem with that deal. But there is some risk. Like, he had back surgery a month ago. He's still out. It sounds like likely another 2 to 3 weeks. So you're plugging him in kind of, you know, a couple weeks left in the regular season. And you're hoping his recovery from the back situation goes well. Again, there's no risk at all there. So it's absolutely worth doing. But it's also possible that Maroon ends up not really being able to help you very much when it's all said and done. So that does have to be accounted for. The Peak trade, I got to be honest, don't like it. I don't like that contract. Two more years after this at $2.75 million a year. And there's, like, real reason to be concerned there. He fell out of the top six in Columbus, one of the worst defensive teams in the NHL. He was getting healthy scratched most nights. Now, the two seasons before that, he was playing over 20 minutes a game. At times, he was on a pairing with Zach Werenski. he throws a lot of hits. He blocks a lot of shots. He's big. He's 6'3". I get it. I get all the appeal. Here's where I'm going to go stats nerd. His analytics, not good. They're quite poor. You would think of a player like that and you think, oh, there's your guy who's going to clear out the front of the net. Well, when he's on the ice, the Blue Jackets give up more high danger chances than when he's not on the ice. So there's stuff that the Bruins have to fix. And Don Sweeney pretty much acknowledged that in not so many words in his press conference. He said, he's going to have to learn our system. They were encouraged that he played 20 minutes against Edmonton the other night. And it sounds like that left a positive impression on them. They think he did well in those minutes. So I guess that potential is there, but listen, there's a reason that his minutes dropped way off and he started getting healthy scratch this season. So Sweeney mentioned confidence. You're gonna have to rebuild that, really just build it from scratch. I mean, he's coming in probably with not much at all. So, you know, if God forbid it doesn't go well and you can't get him confident and you can't get his game on track, $2.75 million for two more years is real money. That's what you pay your third pairing defenseman. So if you're locked into Andrew Peak, that means you don't have that money to go get a different third pairing defenseman. So, you know, there's risk there.
Oh yeah. There's definitely risk. That's the key word. For all the reasons you just mentioned, I would say, I don't know about you. I don't know a whole ton about the player. Don't watch a ton of Columbus games. Not really a nationally televised team. I don't have the NHL package up and running all the time.
Yeah, I can't believe TNT doesn't put them on.
So I don't want to speak out of turn and give a too strong of an opinion on the player because I just quite frankly haven't watched much of him. But from what I have seen and researching him as well in the last couple of hours, as far as his analytics go, Columbus is similar to Anaheim. Like you go there and no one's going to have great analytics. Now, if you're telling me of the players on that team, he has some of the worst analytics. Like I can't excuse that from him. Right.
Which he does. Like that's
sure.
So that's the concern for me.
Sure. But you know, obviously there's times where players need a change of scenery or they're just not getting along with something. Something's not clicking in a certain situation or environment. And a change of scenery is needed. I mean, Pavel Zacha is an example currently on the Bruins roster where in New Jersey, he wasn't really playing to his capability on a night-to-night basis. And he comes to Boston and he's finding his game more and consistently and finding that ceiling a little bit more. So I guess I'll just put a bow on it quickly. Like, yeah, I'm not sold on – I like the size. I like the attributes you mentioned, the size, the physicality. The youth, 25 years old. So this – you said it. It's a gamble. It's a risk. There's a chance that this looks terrible. There's a chance that it looks great, potentially really great, if he ends up being more than a third pair D guy. So I guess the jury is still out on that. But definitely interesting. Of all deadlines to kind of take a risk on a player, you have no cap space. Interesting timing. This feels like it could have been like a summertime thing, perhaps when the Bruins have $27 million in cap space, whatever it is. But hey, if they see, look, the Bruins might see him as somebody who can come in right now and on the fly be a third pair D guy for them and bring what he couldn't bring all the time in Columbus, but maybe he could earlier on. So yeah, look, I guess we'll have to trust the Bruins and their scouting here. I don't want to criticize them too much because they could look really good in this.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, with Forsberg going on LTIR and his season likely being over, not, you know, everyone was down on Forsberg's play recently anyways. So I'm sure, you know, you don't think of that as a big loss, but there's then an opening for that kind of player of, you know, going to kill penalties, block shots, big, strong, like all that. And it now evens out your left, right, where you're now four deep on each side, right? McAvoy, Carlo, Shattenkirk, Peak on the right. Lindholm, Grizzlick, Weatherspoon, Lauri on the left, in whatever order. So in that sense, like, you now have some balance there, good depth. So for this season, like, I honestly don't mind it, because if he can't get up to speed this season, like, I think Kevin Shattenkirk's been playing fine recently, so that's, it's okay if Andrew Peak isn't playing, like, whatever. My concern is more going forward, like, you're gonna have to get him there by next season, because that's your third pairing right shot defenseman next year. You're not paying $2.75 million for a guy to be your seventh defenseman. Like, that's real money. That's what you pay a third pairing guy who's going to play pretty much every night. So, you know, in that sense, like, you have some runway here this season to kind of get him in and get him up to speed, but you're doing that while building up to the playoffs. So it's not like you can't give him too much leash, right? Like, if you have they have 19 games left. So it's not like you can play him, you know, 10 and then be like, all right, well, let's ride it out a little longer. It's like, no, you got to get your team ready for game one of the playoffs. So if it doesn't click pretty quickly, you know, you might not have a whole lot of use for him this year.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. But look, in general, this Bruins team, just to put things into perspective, and I know I've been pegged as the pessimist on this show, though I don't really see that necessarily. But ultimately, like, if Toronto entered this year with no Austin Matthews and no John Tavares, do you think they're making the playoffs? If any team enters the year losing their top two centers from the prior year, like, let's remember, like, this year was not a given that the Bruins are going to be a playoff team. They do have core players in place in Marchand and Pastrnak and McAvoy and Swayman, primarily those pillars. And on their backs, they have been atop the standings, or, you know, or around it all season. This could have been a rebuild year. They had every excuse to miss the playoffs, be a bubble team, or worse. And they're in the mix, right? They're in the mix. So we're gonna get playoff hockey this season. It's kind of I don't really know how to describe it. I was gonna say like a mulligan in golf, but not really. It's just like it's kind of a win-win. And I know that sounds crazy, but like I'm glad that they're in the mix and that they didn't throw assets at a trade deadline. Like, a lot of these teams that just went all in, more or less, there's a gamble, there's a risk, and they had to ship away assets. The Bruins didn't really ship anything away at all. They just added to their team. So if the Bruins get bounced in the first round this year, it's like, all right, whatever. Like, they didn't sell any of their future, really. So, you know, they'll let certain players walk, and they'll utilize all this new cap space next year and this freedom. I mean, don't forget, they're still suffering from the bonus overages from Bergeron and Krejci last year. And like, they'll be able to address their roster more appropriately in the off season. So I guess like what I'm saying is like, just, let's just see what this team can do. Like if they make the playoffs and they lose in the first round, well, guess what? That's what happened last year after a historic season. If they make it to the Final Four or beyond, like, then that's an awesome story. But no matter what, they're not doing it at the expense of their future draft collateral or high end prospects. So again, like, that's kind of why I'm just like breathing easy right now. I'm just enjoying what this team does from here on out, because there's not a ton of risk. One team wins every year. It probably won't be them, but let's have some fun watching it.
Yeah, and we mentioned Weatherspoon a few times. We should note, he signed an extension on Friday. 1 year, $800,000 extension. Obviously, well-earned. He came in this year on a one-year, two-way contract. Started the year in the AHL. And, you know, I think even before forward season kind of ended injury-wise, in my mind, had passed forward on the depth chart. I think he's just been playing better. You know, and remains to be seen if he's a regular in the lineup at the end of the year, or, you know, how everything shakes out once Hampus Lindholm returns, which, another piece of news is that Lindholm is probable for Saturday. So he's probably back Saturday against Pittsburgh. But Weatherspoon, you know, keep him for next year too. To me, no brainer. Like he is, you know, I mentioned Andrew Peak. You're not paying like a seventh defenseman. Weatherspoon, you are, and the fact that he can play both sides, that he's just so, his game is just so simple and effective, and he doesn't make many mistakes. Like that's just an ideal guy to have towards the bottom of your blue line. Another thing I'll say is, you know, talking about what this team can do in the playoffs, I will say if the season ended right now, they're facing Toronto in the first round. I'm picking the Bruins to win that series. I know playoffs different than regular season, but they just swept the season series, and the two wins over Toronto this week were very impressive. 4-1 wins, played the kind of defense you have to play to win in the spring. Thursday, I thought was their most physical game in a long time.
Yes.
They were clearly up for it and show that they can do that. And the guys who are doing it, it's like, I don't expect them to do it all 82 games, all regular season, but there's no reason those guys can't bring in the playoffs. And I mean, Charlie McAvoy, who is probably their most consistently physical player, but Charlie Coyle certainly has the size to do it and can when he wants to use his body. Justin Brazeau, I thought, was really physical in that game. Mm. We know that's, despite his size and role, it's not really his MO. That's not the scouting report that he came with, but you see that he can do it. I thought Weatherspoon was physical, you know, drops the gloves with Bertuzzi, kind of got lunch handed to him a little bit in that fight. Wasn't really the best fight, but hey, he was willing to do it.
He's not going to bully anybody. He's not going to scare anybody, but he's willing though. He's willing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, you mentioned the first round. Yeah. It won't be Florida. Okay. We know they won't be playing Florida in the first round. Just because they're going to be jockeying for that top spot, but Florida presumably would be a future opponent if the Bruins were to get past the first round. Look, I look at three teams, right? I look at Toronto because the Bruins might very well play them in the first round. I look at Florida because, like as I just mentioned, and I look at Carolina because Carolina is a team that has size, and they just like the Carolina. The biggest knock on them was they didn't have any stars. Well, Jake Gensel is a 40 goal scorer. You add him to a team that, you know, that's a really good fit. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, and even if it's Tampa Bay, like the Bruins a month ago, month and a half ago, were rolling out a fourth line of Oscar Steen, Lauko, and Boquist maybe, or something like that. And you look at that fourth line, you watch this Bruins team, and you say to yourself, it's just not enough beef back there to play against those teams I just mentioned in a playoff series. They'll just get bullied around the ice. I'm not even talking like fighting or hit. I'm just saying, you're just lacking that size in those roles. Okay. Now the Bruins can put out 6'7" Justin Brazeau, or 6'6". What is he? 6'6"?
Six, I think he's listed at. Yeah.
So you put Brazeau, who's 6'6", probably 6'7" on skates, right? Is that how that works? Something like that.
Probably even more than that. Yeah. What is skates at?
Like probably a couple inches, 2 inches. I'd say
2-3 inches. Yeah.
So bear with me here. Envision the Bruins playing a playoff series against Florida or Carolina, okay? Or even Toronto with Reeves or whatever. And picture the Bruins matching up Lauko, Steen, and Boquist against those teams with that size and physicality. Now, picture, you know, 6'7" on skates, Justin Brazeau, and 6'6" on skates, Pat Maroon out there in the corners against Burns in Carolina, or Slavin, or Pesci, or, you know, these guys in Florida. It makes more sense. You look at it and you say to yourself, okay, they match up better now. Like in those areas, the Bruins, they can match them now. And I'm telling you, I know Patrick Maroon is not nearly as important as David Pastrnak, but when you're talking about a team sport, you have to look at who's across the ice from you, right? Like, Maroon's going to be out against other teams' energy guys, right? And you have to have those guys to combat those guys. So I just look at the Bruins, and they have more size now. And I'm not saying size is everything, but it is something. It does mean something, I'm telling you.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, and I do think the way the Bruins have played this week, because I'll throw the Edmonton game in there too. I know they blew it at the end, and that leads to all the same discussions about blowing leads. But the way they played the vast majority of that game defensively to limit that team to check well on the second night of a back-to-back, it's like they can compete with and potentially beat anyone in a playoff series if they play like this. Now, we haven't seen it consistently enough this season, so that's a huge question for them. But yeah, like it's a weird position to be in, because like I absolutely stand by saying like they're not particularly close to a cup favor for me. I would have a hard time picking them getting past the second round. But I don't like the underdog mentality can be a good thing, and this team hasn't really had that for a while. And they might have it by the playoffs. Like, they're going to hear, again, maybe not the first round. I think picks would probably be pretty even if it's them versus Toronto. But second round against Florida, if Florida finishes out the regular season as well as they've been playing, everyone's going to pick Florida to win that series. And I don't know. We see it all the time. We just saw it last year with Florida doing it to you. Like,
right.
There is something to be said for that. So
yes, there is.
You know, it. I mean, it can, in a way, like it can make the team more like. So many fans have been down on the Bruins recently, and understandably so. But you better believe, like, they're all going to be back on board if, you know, second round they go down to Florida and win Game One, and everyone's embracing the underdog Bruins now. Like,
yes,
you can easily see that happening.
Oh, yeah. There are so many intangibles at play in postseason hockey. And the best way I can probably describe in my words what you're saying is I feel like last year the Bruins won 65 regular season games. They had the best regular season record in the league's history, most points, blah, blah, blah. We all know the story. When you do that, when you go out there in 82 games and you perform that well, you have – every expectation in the world on your shoulders. You're playing to not lose as opposed to playing to win. You know what I mean? Like that's the motivation. Your motivation, I feel like the Bruins' motivation last year went from, like, for the other 15 playoff teams, was let's go win a Stanley Cup. For the Bruins, it was let's not choke. Let's not be that team to choke. And like you when you don't have that weight on your shoulders, you can play a lot more free. And when I say free, I don't mean like lackadaisical or irresponsible. I just mean like you can just go out there and play. And yeah, and even maybe put a little bee under your bonnet, no pun intended. So like, again, if the Bruins play the Maple Leafs, like, okay, and you try to match up the teams, right? Who has the best forward grouping? Well, despite David Pastrnak, it's going to be on paper, it's going to be Toronto, right? Like their top two centers are Austin Matthews and John Tavares, and your top two centers on paper are Charlie Coyle and Pavel Zacha. No hockey expert or fan in the world is going to sit there with a straight face and say Boston has more talent in their top two centers. But which team plays better as a unit? You know, I'm watching Toronto on Thursday, and I don't want to be unfair because they've been playing some really good hockey and their record all year, but in the last dozen games has been really strong. But maybe it's just when they play the Bruins. The Bruins kind of give them fits. And I also think the Bruins played really well on Thursday. So it's kind of unfair to take a great Bruins game and a poor Leafs game. But are you playing cohesive as a unit? It does. If you have a ton of talent, but you're not playing as a unit, it's not going to do much for you. So the Bruins just need to focus on playing the best hockey they can when it matters most. And by keeping this unit together and not, you know, creating any havoc by bringing in a bunch of new pieces, which, by the way, they couldn't. If they wanted to, they couldn't. right? So it's kind of they didn't make many moves because they couldn't, right? But still, that's so what? You know what I mean? So that's how I see it.
Yeah. And of course, the other potential big splash that they got linked to was the, and Bridget and I talked about this on the last podcast, but the reigniting of the Elias Lindholm rumors. But that was contingent on Vancouver getting Jake Guentzel, which didn't happen because he went to Carolina instead. So, you know, I guess there was maybe a chance that the Canucks would have pivoted to another top wing like Pavel Buchnevich or maybe even Tyler Toffoli. But most likely, once they didn't get Guentzel, they were just going to hang on to Lindholm. So, you know, you can't get someone who's not available. So that, you know, I will say, like, not getting another center, I think, could be costly. You know, we've seen some of their struggles on faceoffs, especially defensive zone, late in the game. You really feel like they could have used another good faceoff guy, and maybe it's still Johnny Beecher comes back up at some point, but I don't know where he's playing in this lineup. Like, Jesper Boqvist is doing everything else well other than faceoffs. So I don't know that you're taking him out if he's playing like this. You just added another fourth liner. Like, Pat Maroon would plug in fourth line left wing. So even if you're going to do something where, like, you know, Beecher takes faceoffs, but he's playing the wing or whatever, like, that's probably out now. So I don't really know where he would get into the lineup. You know, there had been kind of like a late, some late chatter that maybe the Bruins circle back a Nick Dowd out of Washington who wound up not getting moved. So, you know, who knows if there was anything there, but that's one, you know, Elias Lindholm would have helped in a lot of areas, but that's, he is one of the best faceoff guys in the NHL too. And that, you know, that's another area where you would have liked to have seen the Bruins do something, but listen, there weren't a lot of centers that got moved, and some of the ones who did weren't good on faceoffs. Like, the Rangers got Alex Wenberg. I think he's like 44% on faceoffs. That doesn't help. So, yeah, that was a tough market, but it remains a weakness of this team.
All right, so let me ask you a question. So let's go back to your opening shift regarding Ullmark, and because this would have been the one area. Now, certain names that people were also expecting to potentially be moved today or before today at 3 o'clock would have been maybe Grizzlick or DeBrusk, right? It wasn't just Ullmark. Like, the Bruins, it was documented that the Bruins were open ears for a hockey trade. The reason that they were only open to a hockey trade, Scott, is because they don't have any first round draft picks and they have no cap space and they don't really have many highly touted prospects. Mason Lorai is somebody that, you know, the Bruins have to be really wooed to probably move on from. He's currently helping their NHL club, and Fabian Lysell. I feel like the Bruins want to at least see him in an NHL game for the Bruins before deciding to move on from him, which hasn't happened yet. So you add up all those pieces, and it's like, okay, the Bruins can't do anything unless they just make a straight-up hockey trade on the NHL roster. So then you look at, okay, well, who on their roster has so much value that they could possibly get a return worthwhile? And there you go. There's your answer, Linus Ullmark. Okay. The Bruins recognize that. And despite a lot of Bruins fans either wanting to try the goalie rotation in the playoffs or just to keep them until the summer so they could watch more goalie hugs, whatever the case may be, the Bruins management brass decided that they wanted to try to move them. So, well, you know, ultimately, when you give yourself a short leash to try to make a move to improve your club, you're not going to have a lot of wiggle room. It's either going to work or it's not. And the Bruins didn't have time on their side here. Now, who knows how long they were trying to kick the tires on an Ullmark deal. I'm sure they didn't just wait till, 10 a.m. on March 8th with the 3 p.m. deadline. I'm sure this has been in the works for a couple of weeks, probably trying to kick the tires, maybe longer. As you mentioned, there were some rumors out there that the Bruins had a deal in place to send him to Los Angeles, and Ullmark utilized his no movement clause and vetoed the trade. So if it was up to the Bruins, he would be in Los Angeles right now, according to this rumor. which was a credible source. I just forget who it was. But Allmark said no. Okay.
Frank Saravalli. He had the Kings as the potential team.
Right.
Kevin Weeks had the initial report, yeah.
Okay. So we can speculate on who potentially that was going to come back to Boston in return. I'm sure that'll be fun. But before we do, look, people might be annoyed. People who wanted Allmark to be traded will be annoyed probably that the player decided to utilize his no movement clause. Unfortunately, that's exactly why that clause is in place.
Right.
So you can't be mad at the player because, again, try to look at it from beyond the hockey perspective, right? Look beyond the boards. Maybe Allmark has a young kid in school in Boston in a good school system or something and doesn't want to pull their kid out of school. Or maybe there's something like that in their personal lives. If a player doesn't want to just get up and leave, they don't have to. And if they can exercise that right. So yeah, do you have something to say there?
Yeah, the report was that geographic location had a lot to do with it. Well, Allmark has family visiting from Sweden quite a bit. Like he has family that comes in to Boston every now and then. It is harder to get from Sweden to Los Angeles than it is Sweden to the East Coast. It's an extra 6 hours. So like that, I get that. Like, again, they're humans. That's a very human reason to want to stay East.
Exactly.
And you're right. Like, the Bruins gave him a no trade clause, you know, that listen, like you could have, if you didn't want to give him a no trade clause, you could have either not signed him, played hardball, right. Like whatever that right. Ultimately you negotiate for that for a reason, because Allmark in his mind is saying, here's this list of teams. Maybe they're all West Coast. I don't know. Some guys don't want to go to Canadian teams for financial tax reasons, all that. Like,
yeah,
there are reasons that players fight for this. And if you get it, yes, you have every right to utilize it. And I do not blame him at all.
Exactly. And I'm glad we brought this up because like even myself, like I'm not going to hide it. Like I've been in the camp all along dating back to the off season after he won the Vezina. Move him now while his value is that of a Vezina. Jeremy Swayman is pretty much his equal already at that time. And he's younger and he's clearly your future. I like Swayman's mentality. You know, you're watching the national anthem before the Maple Leafs game. And I know you were in person, Scott, but the camera was on on Swayman during the national anthem. And he's like, he's literally rocking back and forth, smiling in anticipation for this hockey game. That there's just an intensity and a gamesmanship. You know, he's a gamer. And say what you want, but Tuukka Rask had kind of like a nonchalant like demeanor about him, and so does Allmark. And I it's not that I have anything against that, but when I see Swayman that engaged mentally, it's like that just I love that. So it's not so much anything wrong about Allmark or Rask, but it's something that Swayman does that I just love about him. So I saw that kind of early on, and I was kind of the camp like all the Bruins have deficiencies. The same deficiencies that they have now they had in the summer. And I kind of wanted them to move on from Allmark then. Now, maybe they tried to and it didn't work out, just like it didn't work out at the trade deadline. But ultimately, if you're like me and you were hoping that they could have moved him for something, I did see the report and I was like, and I saw that Allmark vetoed it and I was like, son of a bitch. But very quickly, I was like, but okay, fine. But that's his right. That's not his fault. If I should be angry at anybody in this situation, it should be the Bruins, because if they wanted to move him now, they should have had the hindsight to move him earlier. And they gave him this contract with these rights. And so, yeah, I guess there's some second guessing probably from the Bruins brass right now. Unless they tried everything they could have done to do in the summer, they should have some second guessing right now, considering that they're at the trade deadline and they decided to try to move them. And if they didn't try to move them in the summer, there should be some second guessing on their part a little bit.
Yeah. And I will note that, you know, all along we were saying they have no cap space. In the end, they did have cap space. They put forward on LTIR. That's $3 million. And, you know, now I guess we could get into, you know, maybe they didn't know for sure that Forbert was going on LTIR until Friday. Who knows? But like, it's worth noting that Vegas wound up adding Noah Hanifin for less than a $3 million cap hit. Actually, quite a bit less, because they ended up with 75% of his salary getting retained. So that $3 million, like, with how much salary gets retained in all these deals now, you actually could have done something pretty meaningful. Again, if you're willing to give up the assets. And that brings up the second part of it, which is, you know, you don't have a pick in the first three rounds this year. You know, you don't have a first or a third next year. So I get it. Or you don't have a second or a fourth next year, I think. But anyways, regardless, like, we know they're thin on assets. But, like, they did end up with some cap space to potentially do something bigger. That's how they ended up fitting Andrew Peak at 2.75. Obviously, they just decided there wasn't something bigger out there that made sense to part with the limited assets that they have. So, you know, I will say that there were a couple of these bigger deals didn't cost as much as I thought they were going to, but Hanifin being one of them, Gensel being one of them. It feels like, you know, Pittsburgh got some nice pieces from Carolina for that, but that kind of felt like more of a quantity over quality package. They didn't get any other top five prospects. They only get a first round pick if Carolina makes the cup final. So, you know, in the end, like, there were certainly deals where I was like, wow, I can't believe that guy went for that. But some of the bigger ones were not as crazy as I think maybe people thought they were going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. So we'll see how it plays out, Scott. I think that I definitely think that there was probably less buzz in the air. Well, the only buzz in the air for the Bruins this deadline was probably, can they find a way to move Ullmark? Because that speculation was growing. And
the Elias Lindholm one. Like, that kind of popped up and seemed...
Yeah, I guess.
To me, when you get, like, the big national... When you get, like, your Elliot Freemans and Emily Kaplan's and Kevin Weeks talking about it, that's where I'm like... Okay, that's a little different than, you know, some of the other people who do occasionally break trades, but traffic and more rumor mill stuff from time to time. Like, those guys are like, okay, that there's actually something there.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to discredit their expertise, but I guess what I'm saying is I wasn't even that excited about the prospect of that happening necessarily. Like, I'm not really, we've talked about it in the past. Like, I'm kind of like a little bit down on him as a player this year. And I don't, without knowing the return, I wasn't too excited about giving up, you know, what the Bruins do have in picks and assets to get Lindholm. So I guess that's more so what I meant, you know?
Yeah, fair enough.
Hanifin, if they could have found a way to get Hanifin, that would have been a big one, but somehow Vegas conveniently Mark Stone goes on the LTIR and then they bring in Hurdle and Hanifin. It's the Vegas way, but you know what? That's credit to them.
Yeah. You want to, I don't know if this is a bold prediction, 'cause like statistically it's probably not, but I feel like everyone considers Vegas the cup favorites now because of what they just did, getting Noah Hanifin, Tomas Hurdle, Anthony Mantha, like just going all out. Stone probably going to be back for the playoffs. They're not going to win the cup. They're not going to repeat, because you kind of touched on it earlier. Like last year, the Bruins were that team where it's just like what everyone's saying about Vegas right now is what they're saying about you, where it was like, oh my God, they got Orlov and Bertuzzi and Hathaway's a perfect fit there. And it's like, oh my God. And Taylor Hall is going to be back for the playoffs and Feline, God, like how is anyone going to beat that team?
Yeah.
And they couldn't make the pieces work. And I feel like that could happen with Vegas, where it's like, you know, the formula Vegas had last year was they traded for Ivan Barbashev, a nice complimentary piece that ended up being a good fit. And now this year it was like, they just went full drunken sailor, just like throwing money and picks all over the place. And it's like, you know, yes, on paper, it makes them the favorite, but I maybe it's just scar tissue from last year, but I kind of don't think they're going to win it all.
And and they might very well may not, but not necessarily for that reason. The biggest difference between Vegas' pressure this year and the Bruins' pressure last year is that the Bruins beat themselves last year. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Florida, but the Bruins were in a kind of a down conference last year. Like, there was not that the East wasn't competitive, but you look at the West this year, if you're Vegas, you have to get potentially through Colorado, which, you know, they won the cup a couple of years ago and they have some of the best players in the world and they have some depth and they made some really nice additions too. The Oilers have McDavid and Draisaitl and they've been playing unbelievable hockey. And like there's some, and Dallas probably has the best all around team so far this year through the first 65 games or so. So, and Vancouver, Vancouver's had a, so the, they have, they're the, one of the top teams in the league as well this year. So, there's probably five teams out West that I could see winning the Stanley Cup easily. And Vegas is among them. But last year with Boston in the East, it was their conference to lose and they did.
Well, yes and no. The Bruins were clearly a tier above everyone, but I do think the East was strong last year. If you remember, like there was last year was the East that had the arms race leading up to the trade deadline. And I think most people thought like all those teams got much better. Like Toronto made what we thought were some good moves that ended up not paying off. Tampa went big for Tanner Janot, and you were like, okay, he's not the most talented player, but man, look at the way he plays. Like, look at that hard nose, physical style. Like, boy, is that perfect for playoffs? Well, not really. You know, Rangers we thought were pretty loaded. Carolina had the Svechnikov injury, but still a really good team. So
that's true. The Rangers did bring in Kane and Tarasenko at the end, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. So, Scott, we've probably covered a lot of the trade deadline. We're getting up against an hour here, but I'd be remiss. I thought Thursday against the Maple Leafs, I personally think was one of the most enjoyable games of the year to watch, if not the most. Not to discredit some from earlier on, but it's, I think it might be up there of the most entertaining game of the season.
Yeah, that it was awesome. It was the even just the atmosphere in the building. Like I, you know, just kind of casually tweeted out at one point. I was like, "This game rules!" And it was like that was the like you're just kind of like sitting there with like a dumb smile on your face because you're like you're like this is great hockey, man. Like
yes, exactly. I think unfortunately, and it's there's no other way to describe it other than it's just the way of the world nowadays. Fortunately, you know, professional sports has, there's been rule changes to make things more safe for players. And there's, and so fortunately from a health perspective, these things have been implemented, but certainly the NHL back in the day was probably more entertaining from a physicality perspective and all that. So I'm trying to be political when I speak about this stuff, but I guess what I'm trying to say is I feel like the game, the NHL, it's an 82 game season. It's focused on speed and skill and systematic play and X's and O's. It at times feels like it's being played by robots as opposed to humans who make mistakes. And it kind of becomes a little bit monotonous to watch game in and game out. It's like you're just watching two teams that, yeah, they all skate well, they all pass well, they're all in position. But because they all do that, it's kind of just like it can be boring sometimes. And I think that a game like Thursday, there was emotion, there was passion, there was animosity. And I think that brings out the best in everybody. And, you know, there were stories being told throughout that game. And for that reason alone, I thought it was a great watch. Vintage.
Yeah. And again, like just really encouraging to see that the Bruins can do that, can play that way. That the physicality, obviously, for sure, because we've all been looking for it all year. And even Jim Montgomery said they need more of it. Like they all know. It's just, you know, like how do you manufacture it for a Wednesday night game in January? You know, like you can say like, yeah, we need more of a physical response, But then it's like, okay, but it's actually work to go out there and do it. And they just had, like, maybe it's because it was second game in a week against Toronto. Obviously, things really ratchet up when Marchand gets cross-checked in the throat, like, 5 minutes in or whatever it was. So, right. like, that obviously jacks it up a couple notches. But, yeah, it was there. And again, even beyond all the physicality and having a response, the defensive effort to, you know, I think they held Toronto to 7 high danger chances for the night, which was the second fewest Toronto's had in the game all season. Like, you know, again, before this week, I didn't know if this Bruins team could still play this kind of defense that they've played these last 3 games.
Yeah.
Because we just hadn't seen it in so long. They gave up 3 or more goals in 11 straight games.
I know.
And was just really sloppy. And
yeah.
So to see it, you're like, okay, like that's a reason to be hopeful, to be optimistic.
Yeah, and I was trying to play the role of kind of the optimist a little bit during that time, because it just, I'm not trying to say it doesn't matter, okay, but playing strong defense in February is only as good as if you still play it in April, right? If you play strong defense in February, but you shit the bed in April, what good was it? What I'm trying to say is, I'm not trying to put a stamp of approval on lackluster play in a regular season. What I'm trying to say is, ultimately, it comes down to, it matters playing. You need to play the best when it matters most. And if they start to ramp it up now and catch some steam here, that's great. Look, I didn't think they were playing great defense heading into the playoffs last year. They were winning on talent, but they didn't have a set lineup every night. They had too many additions and whatnot, and the chemistry wasn't there. But it's nice to see that that they do remember how to play. And I just want to play strong defense. And I just want to mention real quick, against Toronto, you know, Ryan Reeves had a couple of, you know, hit from behinds and open ice. Nothing crazy. All right. But, you know, like on David Pastrnak, right? Like Pastrnak would make a move and, you know, Reeves would kind of give him a little shove from behind. Again, all within the rules, no big deal. But that happened. You saw, you know, McCabe cross checks Marchand in the neck. And I know Maple Leafs fans are probably going to be bitching about Marchand's hit on Knies, but the cross check to his neck was first and it probably got him going. You see, Max Domi. You know, he gets a couple of licks in on McAvoy, a couple of quick rabbit punches, bare fist. Like, you add Patrick Maroon to the roster, he's gonna be able to stand up for that stuff. The Bruins have Trent Frederick, but that's it. Like, and you don't want Trent Frederick, somebody who is capable of 50 points potentially this year, fighting all the time. And I just want to mention that while Patrick Maroon can play that role for the Bruins, he also has 304 points in 778 career games. Like, he's not just like a goon like Ryan Reeves. Like, he can play and produce, is all I'm trying to say.
I think 290 of those came during that one weird stretch where he was on Connor McDavid's line.
Yeah yeah, but you know what I mean, he's a guy that can play. I mean, so this year he had 16 points in 49 games before going out. Like, that's like totally acceptable for a guy in that role,
right?
Very acceptable.
Better than what you've gone from most of your fourth line.
Right.
So year. I just like until Bogvist recently, really.
Right. So I just want Bruins fans who might be down on Maroon for whatever reason to recognize, while he might not have the foot speed. And Scott, you mentioned the back surgery. Who knows how Maroon fits in post-injury, post-recovery, and not having a ton of games with the Bruins. But it's not as if the Bruins are just going out and getting a goon that just fights like Ryan Reeves. Like, Patrick Maroon is a proven player in the league, you know, almost 800 games and, you know, about a half a point per game guy, and he has 3 Stanley Cups to his name. So just don't fall for that narrative that he's a goon, because he's like, he can play. He can play. He can help this team in the role that they're asking him to play.
Yeah, and we got to talk to Kevin Shattenkirk after practice today, and the deal wasn't official yet, but so, like, Montgomery sort of danced around it. Shattenkirk had no problem just talking about Patrick Maroon and how much he'll help the Bruins. they won a cup together in Tampa in 2020. Shattenkirk said he's Maroon's a really close friend. By the way, Maroon and Frederick also know each other because they're both from St. Louis. So they've skated together before. So he has a couple familiar faces in that locker room. But yeah, Shattenkirk kind of gave his scouting report on him and highlighted two things where you're like, yeah, someone in that role has to be able to do that. He said he gets pucks out of the zone along the boards. And like, there you go. Got to be able to do that. Can't have a fourth liner who doesn't know what to do when the puck gets to him on the boards, because we've seen that. And then in the offensive zone, he said he hangs on to pucks. So maybe it's not always the most creative playmaking. Maybe it doesn't always have the best end result, but he's going to possess it, and he's not going to make a stupid play that turns it over, leads to an odd man rush. So yeah, those are like, those are important things, right? Like, that's how you can stem the tide. You know, if you're getting pinned in your own zone, all right, you need guys who can get the puck out. If your fourth line can get offensive zone possession time, there you go. Like, if they score, great, but at least possess it, alleviate some pressure, build some momentum, maybe land a hit or two in there. So, you know, like, those things are, yeah, it's solid. He's not a game changer. And again, the possibility is there that he might just physically not be able to help much at all. But if he is, if his recovery goes well, which right now we don't really have any reason to doubt that it is, then yeah, he absolutely can be a useful player. Like, you're not asking him to play 15 minutes a night. You're talking, you know, 10 to 13 in the regular season and maybe 7 to 10 in the playoffs.
Exactly. I mean, going into the deadline, you know, the last month plus, I thought to myself, a realistic, strong deadline for the Bruins would be bringing a guy like Maroon, bringing a guy like Jacob Middleton, and maybe a middle six forward to help out. They brought in Maroon. They brought in Peak, that maybe could be a Middleton type, for all we know, at some point. And obviously, as we said, they weren't able to get that middle six guy. But we'll see how this team does, Scott. It's, you know, as crazy as it is, they're four wins in April away from doing better than last year's team, which is it's the way it goes.
One other thing I want to bring up. So part of what added to the great atmosphere Thursday night was the 2011 Cup team being there,
right?
The final era night of the season. And technically the whole era was post 2000. But the real focus pregame was obviously on the 2011 Cup team, and just like seeing all those guys around, like, obviously gets fans going. You know, you get all the video highlights, and then even stuff from, you know, from the era before, from pre-2011, like, they threw up the PJ Stock, Steve and Pete fight during one of the commercial breaks, throw that in the Jumbotron. Like, obviously that's going to get the crowd going. So, you know, that was a lot of fun too. And if people are looking for extra Bruins content after all the trade deadline stuff, the most recent episode of the Cue the Memories podcast was great. It was, the guests were Andrew Ferentz, Patrice Bergeron, and Claude Julien. Just like sharing stories about 2011, obviously, but also like the build up the few years leading up to that was just, like, it's Bruins porn. Like, that's, you know, we all have, like, we all love those teams. So
is that on their website?
So I know it's like wherever you can get podcasts. I'm sure it's on their website too, I would guess. And Andrew Ferentz is just great. Like, he really should just have his own podcast. He's very, very, very funny, very entertaining.
You know what I found funny about that? It was really cool to see all those, not all the team from 2011, but, you know, good chunk of them. But it was cool to see Claude. He went in the locker room and before the game. And one thing that I found interesting was, I found this to be very unique, but something tells me that the Bruins being an original six team and having a former Stanley Cup champion team in the house being, as you said, honored as part of this era's night, the NHL pulled some strings and they got the Stanley Cup in the house, which I don't think anybody was expecting. I don't even know if the Bruins were expecting it. So
Marchand said he didn't even know it was going to be there. Well, and, like, obviously he was on that team.
Right. And so that's where I wanted to go with this, because it was very, I'm surprised this wasn't turned into something ridiculous online, but I'm glad it wasn't. But it was very interesting, very peculiar to see the Stanley Cup, which is supposed to be coveted and only, you know, like touched and photographed with by in season by the champions, right? And so Chara walks out from the Zamboni entrance with the Stanley Cup, like it's the home opener in 2012 all over again. It's 13 years later, and they take a picture around it. But what's the most interesting is you have an active player in Brad Marchand in his uniform right before a game, taking a picture with the Stanley Cup, the very trophy that he's busting his ass for all year and will be in the spring to take a picture with and hold. And it was kind of like, what's Marchand going to do? Not take a picture like that. Those are guys you'll cherish with your bond with for a lifetime. He should be in that picture. He earned it. It was just a funny circumstance I found.
Yeah.
Kind of taboo.
Yeah, you're right. Like it is one of those weird hockey things that, you know, maybe Marchand just doesn't care, which I would say great, because I think all that stuff's kind of silly. Like there's been a couple teams recently that have broken it, but like forever it was like you don't touch the Prince of Wales Trophy or the Clarence Campbell Cup for winning the conference. And I was always like, it's kind of silly. Like you can touch it, guys. It's fine. Like it's not really a curse. And fortunately, there's been a couple teams. Like I know Vegas touched it last year. Like Mark Stone just didn't care. So yeah, I don't know. Hopefully guys are just putting some past tradition type things behind them, and I don't know. Have fun. Hey, go chuck a beer out of it if you want. Who cares?
Yeah, no, for sure. It was just funny to see an active player in uniform taking a picture on the ice before a game, like it was at like a show and tell at a local hockey rink. Like it was just because then he's going back to the bench with all of his current teammates, none of which have ever touched the cup. It was just kind of a funny thing to see, you know.
It was also funny to hear Marchand talking about how like, oh yeah, like I'm still the young guy around that group, and they still bully me and
I'm
the butt of every joke.
And then he goes to the bench and he's the leader and the captain. Yeah, exactly. That is a funny dynamic. Anyway, and one final note too is when Klo's in the locker before the game, he made a joke about something like, I'm going to say something that I always used to say, which was, Marshy, don't do something stupid. And all the guys were laughing. And and one of those guys was Pastrnak. And I kind of forgot. I was like, oh shit, that's right. Claude coached Pastrnak when he broke into the league for the first couple of years. They know each other. Like, and at the time, you know, Claude was probably hard on him and probably was trying to teach him certain things. And certainly his second year, like kind of like didn't really go too well for Pastrnak, but now for Claude to see him as one of two or three true elite goal scorers in the National Hockey League and in the world, you know, I'm sure that probably may have felt good for Pasta to see him now that he's an established guy in the league and one of the best players in the world.
Yeah, I also like it's just great. It's great to see Claude around and like I saw he was on Nesson pregame, I think, or maybe it was one of the intermissions, but like smile on his face and the cue the memories. He's actually had like a couple pretty funny moments. And you didn't see that a ton when he was the coach because he always just seemed super serious. So like it's good to like see that side of him, and you know, on the cue the memories, they even talked about like one of the criticisms is always like, oh, he's too strict and he's too hard on the kids and too demanding and all that. And like he actually talks about that and he's like, I was aware of that, and there were times I thought that I might have been doing that. Like I thought maybe I was going too far. And you know, and he talks about like why he did it and why it was important for him. So just a lot of good stuff there.
Yeah. No, Thursday was a really cool night for the Bruins, and the deadline's come and gone. We know what this team is going forward, and we'll see what they can do, Scott. So any final takeaways? They have Pittsburgh on Saturday, but other than that, we'll be back in on Monday for the podcast.
Yeah, no, I think I'm all good.
Great. Well, everybody, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you on Monday. Hey, guys, thanks for watching the Skate Podcast. If you want to see more of our videos, visit our playlist.
Not in front of a screen? You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't forget to follow us on social media. And if you enjoyed this video, please don't forget to give us a thumbs up, subscribe to our channel, and leave a comment.